I'm John Batchelor with Professor Eugene Finkel of Johns Hopkins. The book is Intent to Destroy, highly recommended before you form an opinion about what is to be done with Ukraine and the Ukraine war. Russia's 200-year quest to dominate Ukraine. I recommend this to the European Union, to the European Union Commission, now making decisions about continuing to buy natural gas from Russia, to the NATO forces who are not any longer unanimous about the resistance to Russia. I recommend the facts, but I turn to the professor also. Professor, I know NATO is the explanation that Putin offers the Russian people as to why he maintains the war with huge, huge casualties and what you'd have to say is a damage to a generation in Russia. And the economy that will be many years in recovering. However, at the same time, I want to know about the EU, because the EU membership is not the same as NATO. It is the original debate that was happening in Ukraine before the 2014 crisis. Is the EU adequate for Ukraine now? Is that imaginable? Is that a way out for the European Commission to take charge of rebuilding NATO and providing security?
Well, I would very much want, you know, Ukraine to join the EU and also NATO. But I think, you know, if I'm right, then all those debates about which organization Ukraine could or could not or should or should not join just miss the core point. If it's a war about history and about ideology, and if Russians are really serious about, you know, Ukraine not being a real state and them having to control Ukraine either directly or indirectly, then, you know, what kind of state, what kind of union or alliance Ukraine joins is meaningless, because it will not solve the key problem of Russians wanting to dominate and control Ukraine. So Ukraine, even if Ukraine joins NATO and Russians still believe that they should control Ukraine, they can try find other ways to do it, such as, you know, buying politicians, misinformation, electoral interference. They're pretty skillful at doing it around the globe, and they will try. So for me, the key question is not which alliance or organization Ukraine will join, but what do we do about the Russian belief that they should control Ukraine? That's the conversation that we should be having.
I'd also turn back to the American presence in this story and the drama. I mentioned John Quincy Adams in the 18th century. Certainly, a little detail I smiled when I read that I believe it's Donetsk. The original name was Utica. Is that the one I have correct? Because they imported technology from the United States, and a man named Hughes was a hero to Donetsk. We're talking about now and again integration with the United States, which is puzzling. And of course, there are all those Galicians who vamoose because of brutality at one ear or another who are here in the United States. So we gained a deal from Ukraine over the centuries. But now I come to how Ukraine has been treated by several presidents. President Obama, who chose not to make a stand over the Crimean and Donbass cruelties. And President Trump, the first term, not to challenge in any fashion what had not been challenged by the Obama administration. And President Biden saying as long as it takes, but being very chary about weapon systems and support, and NATO itself. And now President Trump again saying, I'll settle this in 100 days. The version that I get from the American point of view is we can handle this. We're the power. What I get from reading your book is I don't think they're well informed about Ukraine and about how there is no settlement that does not leave Ukraine an independent state. Is it your measure that the Trump administration and the previous administrations understood that Ukraine is a state?
I think, you know, the bigger problem is not what they thought about Ukraine, but how we constantly misread Russia and what Russia is and what Russia wants to be. Because, you know, we treated them as similar to us, as, you know, transactional in the case of Trump, rational in the case of other administration, weak. So we did not take the ideology and the beliefs seriously. We did not treat Russia for what it is, and that's revanchist neo-imperialist power. And that's why we miscalculated and we'll keep miscalculating. So I absolutely agree with you. The U.S. government and several administrations and people in the national security community did not understand Ukraine, partly because there was simply not enough expertise, partly because we perceived Russia, you know, from our, be too similar to us while they were not. And I don't see how President Trump is going to fix it again, because here in his case, the belief is just making a deal, getting a Nobel Peace Prize, getting out, it's transactional. Russians do not think this way. So, no, I'm not very optimistic about, you know, President Trump fixing this war anytime soon.
And the Europeans, I ask you.
And it's, the same for Europeans. They might be even worse, actually, especially when it comes to, you know, Central and Southern Europeans. Eastern Europeans are different because they have, you know, hands-on experience dealing with Russia, so they understand it. But there is a clear misunderstanding of what Russia is in Berlin, in Rome, in Brussels. There is a start sobering up, but still, there's still a very long way to go.
Is there success if the Baltics are listened to or Poland is listened to? Those are voices that are very clearly saying Russia remains a threat, that this is not going to be resolved, whatever you say about Ukraine.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we should have listened to the Russians, and I think people in NATO and in the US do recognize that we should have listened to those people. But, you know, back then they were dismissed as, you know, US as countries that were so traumatized and brutalized by the Soviet Union and the Russian Empire that, you know, they're just living the trauma and overreacting. Well, apparently they were absolutely right all along.
I come back to your grandfather, Israel Lev. He was recruited by the Soviets, and he chose not to follow. What did they want him to do? He chose not to join.
Right. So after the war, when my grandfather comes back to Western Ukraine and discovers that, you know, his entire family got killed in the Holocaust, he needs to find a job, and the state security, what later became as the KGB, comes to him with an offer to join the Soviet state security because, you know, he's from the region, he knows the people, he is a combat officer, part of the Red Army, and his one of the two best decisions of his life, besides marrying my grandmother, was to say, no, I'm not joining the KGB and going on to live a normal life. And but that also shows you the mindset of the Russian government at that time, being very focused on repression, recruiting local people to oppress other local people, and always keep an eye on Ukraine.
And they offered him a deal that they thought he couldn't turn down. Is that correct?
Well, they offered him a pretty good job. They offered him a house. They offered him security status, definitely. You know, being a member of the security services obviously elevated you to the, you know, to the level of the elites. Luckily, he said no.
The book is Intent to Destroy. Eugene Finkel is the author. Russia's 200-year quest to dominate Ukraine and to bribe Eugene's grandfather, who chose to say no to the KGB. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.